Welcome to another episode of The Life of Lou. Today we're doing another case cast. Remember, every so often we decide to drag you down the hole of pain in which we get ourselves on a regular basis by reviewing cases that we find challenging, interesting, with some degree of an educational spin. Today I wanted to go over a procedure that I thought was interesting. We were discussing it about an arterialization that went down somewhat early, how we opened it, why we opened it, and also a little bit of how we deal with access closure. So I hope you guys enjoy this show.
Vamos.
The following podcast is not relating to my teachings and work at Del Cid Medical Center and is for entertainment purposes only.
Two vascular surgeons walk into a bar and come out with a podcast. We are talking everything vascular and not. Welcome to the Life of Flow podcast.
All right, people. Here we are with another case, Miguel and Lucas discussing our day today. Today, I wanted to share a patient that underwent a deep venous arterialization for a fairly complex wound. And essentially, it's a pretty bad heel wound. And she has an orphan heel. I don't know. How many times you've considered doing an arterialization for these sort of patients, but I believe that when there's arch disease in the setting of a high medial artery calcification, the thought that you're going to get global perfusion, specifically to the hind foot, is I think it's unrealistic. Your thoughts on can you have regional ischemia of the foot despite having a vessel that goes to the foot?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I am not as aggressive with DVAs for heel wounds just because heel wounds I find extremely difficult to manage their wound care. And you have to kind of think, you know, is this patient in my hands going to have a successful outcome? I don't have a podiatrist, you know, at the ready like you do, so I'm a little more limited. But I do think that when there's a heel wound, I actually did one recently for that specific reason, but it was a very like small heel wound with a completely orphan heel. So yeah.
I'm gonna make sure that I share a picture of that wound. I have it on my phone. It would make some MacGyver right now to be able to show it to you, but I will make sure I show it to you. But it is it's rather deep.
Oh wow, yeah.
That's a big one. Would you already be somewhat?
I mean, that has a good granulation base. Is that bone or is that fat?
Well, this is after the arterialization.
No.
Yeah. So this is already when things started moving in the right direction.
How many months afterwards?
Wait, this is just like 2 months afterwards.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's actually not bad. But she also has forefoot ischemia. And this is wounds on her toes that have also started to get much better already.
Did you do that partial? Is that the nail bed that came off? Or is that you took part of that?
That's the nail. Yeah.
Wow, that looks pretty good. Although that third toe looks like it might have osteo.
Yeah, you know, we usually will offer them hyperbarics and 6 weeks of antibiotics.
Oh, really?
For osteo, cool. So we don't necessarily go straight to the amputation. Yeah. But anyway, here's I don't want to go into like some massive conversation about this. I've done it before, but it's about 2 months out, has not shown signs of what we call conversion. Remember that we have those two words that we use to describe results in the resolution. One is the maturation, and the other one is conversion. Conversion means that even in the setting of an occluded graft, you still have appropriate signals.
So, right, we've discussed before that the natural history of DVAs is they all occlude, but despite the occlusion, there is still some improvement left behind. And that is what we call conversion. But this patient had no conversion, despite the first couple of months working well. And I, with the wound I just showed you, I felt very strongly that we needed to keep that that arterialization open. Do you still chase the arterialization if the wound is still not necessarily past the finish line? You do.
Yeah, because I don't have a protocol that you have, so and I don't know how to quantify that. So I just take it to the finish line if I can.
That's it, right? So once you get to remission, then it's fine.
Yeah, then it's fine. Then we're done.
So this is this lady with that wound, and she's doing good. She's moving in the right direction. She went from dry gangrene to this kind of granular base. She's undergone just one podiatric debridement. The intention, I think, was to follow her and potentially put a dermal substitute, wound vac, try to get that base granulated. And I don't love split thickness skin grafts there. I don't think that they do great, but if the wound doesn't contract appropriately, that's where we may have to go. I think those heel lesions, hers is a little more lateral, so I think we'd still be okay.
You think that will close without a skin graft?
I think sometimes you can contract. If you have enough time and patience, it'll just kind of like slowly contract. It's just a matter of you want it quickly or do you want it not that quickly? I mean, there's some pretty big wax you can close with enough patience. But you're right. I think that in her case, I think a skin graft may not be a bad idea. Anywho, she comes to a follow-up appointment and her arterialization on duplex is found to be obstructed. So there's occlusion of the arterialization. And I'll just show you what we have to do. Now, I will preface with this is a procedure with it in the OBL. And at Hope Vascular. And this lady is very, very big. She's got her habit as her. I'll change that a little bit. Like she was very big and she hence has gone into renal failure and dialysis. And so she lost a lot of weight. She's still big, but she lost a lot of weight, which has created this huge panus. And if you see her, she's got really skinny legs, really skinny arms, and then this centripetal mass with all this panus. And so, what we did is we placed her in the table and we retracted the panus and we, you know, do the panisotomy. No, not otomy, but panus, you know, with tape, every trick. And still, the area of the groin was relatively difficult to get to. And I think it's something worth noting that as I've gotten much more comfortable with a Celt, I feel like I don't have to stress that much where I'm getting in because I feel very comfortable that I can seal it up pretty well. And so what I told the team is, you know what? That's fine. I'm just going to go like mid SFA.
I did recently this guy came in and had infected somebody did bilateral axe fems for claudication on a 50 something year old. And they both got infected. So I just took them off and did a patch with a vein patch, but then it had plastics do like complex, like muscle flaps in the groins. And he developed like rest pain afterwards. And he was like, you need to fix me. So I thinking of that, I had done like a deep endarterectomy to, so I could land the stent in the like distal external. But to do that, I stuck mid SFA, 7 French. They didn't care. Just like went up, did a Serab, get the above and below Serab, closed it with a 7 cal, didn't worry about it. It looked great with ultrasound. So, and I did another guy, did a almost a 90-year-old guy that was having wounds from a popliteal aneurysm that was pretty big. It was trashing. And he had a big penis, and I didn't want to put him under, and he didn't really couldn't lay completely flat. So I put a wedge, and again, stuck kind of mid SFA. I had a CAT scan, mid SFA, 7 French sheath, because I needed to put a viable on, a previous viable in there. So, and we're fine.
Yeah. Yeah. You get comfortable at this. I think you have to think that in particular cases like this, where I know I'm going to have the patient anticoagulated, then I don't want just assisted closure, right? Like a Vascade or a Minx. Mm-hmm. I want something to seal and to make me feel comfortable. Because some of these high-risk patients, I'll, you know, give them 10, 15,000 of heparin on in the OBL. I'll seal them. And literally before they leave the office, we have samples and I'll give them 20 milligrams of Xarelto on the way out. I'm like, I want you very wet. Yeah. And guess what? I can't remember. And other than some subcutaneous oozing, I can't remember. And man, I'm going to knock on wood because I say it and now I'm going to get it. But I have not had a pseudo in such a long time. Like I just haven't. And so anyway, but let me walk you through the angio. I'm going to probably accelerate it a little bit. But a couple of things is you can already see the kelt from the initial DVA.
The previous one, yeah.
Yeah, and then now you can appreciate the sheath that's already in that mid-SFA portion of the patient. Look at that. Like, it's kind of halfway down the
line. Damn.
Yeah, it's almost like, almost adductor hiatus, man. But, I mean, she's a complex patient.
So sometimes you have to, yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that the easiest thing. So anyway, as you can see here, all that looks okay. There's that AT that goes down and you can start seeing the stent. You can start seeing the stent there, but the obstruction goes up the TP trunk.
Yeah.
Now, when I did her initial case, that posterior tibial was, you know, pretty sick. And I think in retrospect, I don't know. I mean, it could be a combination of things because it could either be there was outflow restenosis, aggressive restenosis of the vein, which you've pointed or alluded to, that can just shut the whole thing up, and some disease on the proximal end.
Yeah. Do you remember your flow volumes?
But you mean like the last one before it went down?
Yeah, or your initial ones.
She was in, you know, I'm in this 100 to 200 range now. Nothing more, nothing less. But as you can see here, you know, nothing special. But I do think that this is a good image to show what I was alluding to earlier, where there is relatively diseased flow into that segment of the distal of the calcaneus. But you know, what's funny is that at the beginning I couldn't even see that LPA, and after 4 weeks of the arterialization, that LPA is now showing itself a little bit better, which speaks to a little bit of this hibernating vessel recruitment that we see with these things, because this one could say that there's already some degree of biological effect from this fistula being there. But anywho, let me accelerate here a little bit to get us to the point where, you can see here, I'm doing a little bit of pixel shifting just to try to get that image in the right spot. Pretty naked looking keel, but some degree of improvement in that LPA. Let me advance this a little bit more. What I did here is I'm changing my axis sheets. This is a 5-French axis sheath. And what I'm doing is I'm changing it for a 6.45 and Terumo. Whenever I'm going to deal with cloth, I want to have that Terumo valve or whichever sheath. You know, Boston now has
a valve.
Boston now has these sheaths that are also valved. And so you can always unlock it and pull clot out, right? Like if you're using like a Pounce or any of these systems. And so I'm in the OBL. I don't necessarily have the really expensive stuff, but I mean, I can use my ever so trustworthy Rotarex that is really, really well in this scenario. Now, here you could see another thing, which I think is also of note, is look at these kind of stenotic region of the TP truck. There's also something here. I don't know if that's something on the duplex that we had gotten initially. I didn't see anything there, but you know, you never know.
I think it would be difficult because there's not that much flow going there.
Did you leave the door open? Oh, okay, cool. Okay, sorry. This is what we do here on Saturday nights. We have a
multitask
social life, so we dedicate ourselves to do this for you. So anyway, here, just trying to get some images, I guess, with the intention of deciding what tools I'm going to use.
Yeah, I would go put a catheter down there and shoot the venous anatomy in the foot to see what's up there and plan. I don't know. Is that even worth it to you?
Yeah, it is. I don't know why this isn't moving. Let me see if there's something happening here. Okay, here it's gone. Maybe before that, walk me through what you would do with these. So your intention is, okay, I'm going to get a catheter like this one, and you're going to try to poke your way through. And if it goes, do you get a venogram?
Yeah.
Okay. So what are your options? And what can be the result of this? I'm going to let it play. I did the same thing. So what you're going to see is just essentially me maneuvering a wire. I want to say it's probably a Command 18 with that catheter. That's a Bernstein, 4-French Bernstein. Mm-hmm. And, there you go. Just kind of moving it. But walk me through the options of what can happen. Like if you get down there, you're either going to have one.
Yeah, I think the most common thing in my experience is you're going to have some degree of neontomorphic aplasia just at the distal end of the stent. And then distal to that, if you're lucky, then you have normal venous anatomy. So at that point, I think what you do is, I think Rotarex is great. Just, you know, do a couple passes with Rotarex, clear the majority of the clot. IVUS, look at your proximal endpoints, make sure that you don't have any disease that you need to probably stent proximally. I use the intact stents most of the time. Now we got the new, Abbott stents, Esprit. We're trialing them. So that's another option. And then distally, you know, if you have that neontomorphic aplasia, I probably put an Eluvia drug coating stent down there in between the Viabond and to cover the neontomorphic aplasia. And you have to see if you...
I would agree. Let me pause there. And if you saw that, it took me a little bit to be able to cross that area. It was a hard, the wire was just kind of getting stuck over there.
Yeah.
And so, I think it's exactly what you're saying. I'm going to kind of play it slow, but it's exactly that I think that there is some accelerated neoentomal hyperplasia in the vein transition. that then shuts the system down. Like, you see, look at that wire. It's just, and I could feel it. Like, I could feel it was hard getting through that. So do you ever just do DCBs for reinterventions, or do you ultimately go with a scaffold and a drug eluting scaffold?
I go with a scaffold just because, I mean, it's rubber. It's just collagen. You're not going to, like, I don't think you're going to modulate that wall with anything. I'm not going to, like, put a directional cutting atherectomy or anything like that. I don't think that'll do much. So the scaffold expanded. I mean, you could do a Supera too, done there. I think that'd be a good choice.
Yeah, I mean, there's some data that's going to come from some of the studies that we're doing right now. And you would be super surprised, or maybe not, but it's a very significant intimal hyperplasia. Yeah. The moment you arterialize a vein, there's a rapid recruitment of smooth muscle cells, mm-hmm. and hyperproliferation of the endothelium. And it you can see it as early as 2 weeks, like within a couple of weeks of an DVA, you start seeing some significant changes in the vessel wall. So, you know, who knows, potentially preemptively, one should consider that the distal segment of the DVA should always have a DES. Who knows? Mm. Or maybe you wait, then take that first phase of the inflammatory tissue, then extend with the DES the way we're doing it, and then take a look at it. But anyway, what do you think about this? Catheter's through, I'm through, this is the image. Are you hopeful? Do we have a shot at trying to open this thing up, or?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think that's not at the diameter it's going to be when you have restored flow. So that's probably what, like a 3. Yeah. You say that vein's 3 millimeters, 3 or 4. So yeah. I'll be hopeful for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, this is all right. This is venous flow. You see a couple of things, relatively mild maturation, right? If anything, there's a little bit of this first metatarsal, but there's not this massive flow into the periphery. And then the other thing you notice is that I ligated the GSV on her very proximally. See how there's a blanching of the GSV there.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, you mentioned Rotarex. In the past, you've told me that you like to put the Bolt 7 in there. I tried it, but here's the kicker. Yeah. Sometimes it's hard to get into the proximal segment of the stent. So the lymph flow is 3.5 at the top, and I feel like getting a CAT 7 past
it's that. Two, sometimes it's 2.3. The OD is 2.3.
So yeah.
You should be.
You can do it, but it's kind of bulky to get through that. And if I've put a primary stent, then I'm in trouble because I'm just going to annihilate the corners. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you have to be super. I think you have to be careful. You have more experience than I do with the Rotarex. But I feel like with the Rotarex, you have to be careful with those stents because if they catch, they can do some damage.
Yeah, I mean, you have to be careful with whatever you do. But Rotarex. Its efficiency is such that, yes.
I agree.
I really say, listen.
Do you find that most times you don't have to reline?
Correct. I would say 100% of the times I don't reline. What I extend, definitely, right? I extend either proximally or distally, but I don't necessarily reline. So here, my intention was just, I was trying to get a little more distal into this, but I wasn't really, the purpose wasn't really to do all this complex distal work. The purpose was more to open the stents. And so all I needed to do was get a wire deep enough and then bring the Rotarex system down. So here you see the Rotarex. This is a Rotarex 6 French. And so I just start kind of slowly. I look back. I'm like, okay, I'm trying to understand where I'm going to start it. And then I just kind of slowly go. One thing that you'll notice as you...
Did you hit the TP trunk lesion with it?
I did, yeah.
Okay.
One thing that you notice sometimes is... You see how it was hanging? Rough, huh? Yeah, yeah, there was something. there's something definitely there, which is this intimal scar. If you don't have inflow from the distal segment, the stents tend to collapse.
Collapse, yeah. That freaks me out every time.
It does, and you have to be very careful. You can't let that happen because then you catch the PTFE. So yeah. Some people actually think it's really cool to make the stent collapse. Well, guess what? Mm-hmm. It's a really big problem. If the stent collapses over the Rotarex will catch that PTFE material and it'll just annihilate it. So that's what I sometimes do is I go backwards. So I'll cross the whole thing and then start at the bottom and then just start coming up. So first I'll start from above, but if I see a lot of that, then I start from the bottom. See what I just did is I did a pass backwards. I went all the way down real fast and then again, slowly backwards. So I do a couple of backward passes and then I do a forward.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, okay. So you saw it collapsing, then you turned it off. You went all the way through without it on. And then you did a backward pass to have some flow from the native venous system so it wouldn't collapse. 100%. You did that 100%. Twice and then you went forward.
Correct. Exactly. Cool. Exactly. So I, and as you see, that's up in the SSV. Look at the wire. Wire somewhere in the SSV, which is perfectly fine, right? Just forget about that wire. You don't have to really, what it's doing.
Well, is that the wire that comes with the Rotarex?
It could be, or it could be a Command ES because I run the Rotarex and a Command ES on a frequent basis. So let's see here. This was after just, I want to say a couple passes. Look at that. You already have some restored flow. And that TP trunk lesion looks a little better, but there's something also
some stuff there.
Yeah. And I think at this point, I probably went ahead and did I touch that up? This is what's funny with these cases. When you're looking at yourself backwards operating, you're trying to figure out what you were thinking. It's kind of funny, but let's see. It's kind of, when there's a something like this happening, usually that means that they're fetching me something. So I'm guessing maybe I asked for a stent to put here.
I'm getting a seizure with this like image back and forth.
Okay, here you go. So what I did is this is a 580 silver PTX that I just dropped.
You went with the silver.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, Zilbers are the only ones that have 5 millimeters.
Oh, so you put that in the TP trunk. Okay.
Yeah. I dropped the 5 from the proximal arterialization into the proximal PP trunk.
Why didn't you just balloon that?
Because I didn't want to F with it again. Like something was there. There was a significant amount of calcium. Mm. And I just wanted to get that fix. I mean, I had ballooned it. Remember that I told you that the TP trunk and the PT were significantly calcified?
Yeah.
And so I didn't want to do it again, but you'll see here, let me advance and get you here because I actually did it again. not sure what all is happening here. Maybe I'm just going to post-dilate it. Yeah, post-dilate it with like a 3 millimeter balloon, 3.5 maybe, just to get it to where I want it to. And then a little shooty shot, just make sure it looks good. Make sure that I'm not compromising the anterior tibial. And that looks great. Happy with that. And so now we go down to the bottom. So let's see what this looks like. So I took the same balloon, post-dilated. Remember, I opened that up. There was something that felt funky, wonky there. So now let's take a look here.
Yeah.
So there's something there, huh?
Yeah.
So this could be maybe some material, maybe that ISR right here, right?
Definitely. Definitely. But
this felt really hard and rubbery when I was trying to go through.
Yeah.
So let me advance this.
Dogs are going crazy again.
May at this point, I elected to put another Zilver PTX into the distal outflow. let me see. I want to say after this, I brought a stent in. Of course, I have to be very careful that it doesn't catch because I'm doing this all over an 014 wire. So here you go. I was like, okay, whoop, went through. And then kind of took an image and then boom. That's where I wanted to extend it and landed into that segment. And because I thought there was maybe some material, I didn't aggressively post dilate the edge, you know, because sometimes you could just cheese grate the clot.
Mm.
And so
you didn't post dilate? Did you iris?
Not aggressively. Like if I did it like with a 3mm or something or a 3.5.
Yeah.
And so here you go. There's a balloon. There you go. We'll touch up. And then another image.
So, but this patient has a heel ulcer.
Right.
How are you rationalizing that?
Well, this is an uncovered stent, right?
Yeah.
So if you see the edge of the covered stents here, and you actually already see, I don't know, you can see it very discreet, but can you see the Legarge plexus?
Yeah, yeah, you can there, yeah.
There's for a sure. degree of Legarge already into that. The heel wound is in this area specifically. So I thought about that. The reason why it's not a little higher was there was a huge, huge posterior tibial connection, and so it was all draining. Mm-hmm. I brought it a little bit further down.
Yeah.
Still, I think if you don't go past the calcaneus, you're probably going to have a good recruitment of the Legarge plexus. And so,
right there. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, that's where we left it. You know, I don't necessarily go crazy to do more work into the arch. I a lot of times I was very aggressive with the arch, and now I'm a little bit more frugal and respectful. I think that if you do too much work to the arch, you're also potentially shooting yourself in the toe, because then you're going to get all this intimal hyperplasia that we're seeing in the veins from the barotrauma that you're provoking. Even the valvulotome, like I'm very careful. I'll push the valvulotome one, too. Maybe twice, and I still think it's overly aggressive. Maybe there should be like a smaller valvulotome in the kit. But anyway, I left it here. And I guess that what may be interesting to show, well, of course, it's, you know, these are like the final shots, I guess, of the whole thing open all the way down. Yeah, so at this point, flow's restored. I know there's some spasm. I'm not going to overthink it. I've done this enough times. I know it's going to be fine. I'm going to close. And so I alluded to this earlier. I'm already committed in a way that I'm going to use a KELT device. So this is a long 45 centimeter piece. And so now what we're going to do is we're going to switch that over. So I'm going to change the 645 that's coming out. And then I'm just going to change that for a short six. And then once that short six is in there, then we move to the ultrasound. At that point, I really frankly don't use x-ray. I know that a lot of people believe x-ray is probably a fairly safe way to try to deploy a KELT, but the KELT is so easy to see on ultrasound that frankly, I think the best thing you can do is just do it under ultrasound. So here you see the integrate sheet. Look at how that's a pretty spectacular image, right? I mean,
that's a great view.
That you know exactly where that arteriotomy is, and that when you're bringing a closure device, that's where you want to hit it, right there in that transition. Yeah. I come off ultrasound because what I'm doing is I'm advancing the KELT device. Remember, the KELT device, it's snugly through the teeth. And then it kind of clamps onto the sheath at the valve level. So now you see the device is, now it's very clear, right? That before it was just the sheath. Now you can see the device. All right. So now I'm going to close. As you can see, this is a perfect shot, right? You can see the transition very smoothly, right? Is this something you look at when you're closing?
No, I do radiographic
closure. You do it. Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh,
I just do lateral. I go lateral. I mag up. I see exactly where I am. And then after that, I just smart mask. And then I just bring it to where the crossing area is. And that's it.
Yeah. 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 So in my case, what I like to do is I do this, and I'll tell you why, because the Kelt is efficient, but it also you can see it on ultrasound so well. This is the sheath. You'll see it here. And when I'm off ultrasound, all I'm doing is I put the probe on the side and I'm advancing the Kelt, and the Kelt then locks into the sheath, right? There's this little two legs that lock into the valve. And so now you can see that the sheath has the device inside. So what I do is now I pull back without deploying the device all the way back until I see this really echogenic bigger part right there. Look at that. Yeah. So once that end of the device comes in, like it is, like, you know, obviously you're at the end of the device. And so when you turn the first dial of the Kelt, this hyperechoic or hypoechogenic segment becomes a little plate. And so you'll probably see here where I either let go or I asked somebody to do it for me. Let me see if I was able to get somebody to show me, or otherwise I'll put the ultrasound down. But I'm guessing that maybe somebody did it for me because I was, I'm focusing on it. Oh, there you go. Somebody actually did the turn. Okay. Yeah. So you see how that edge became now like this little plate. And then I can start doing small twists and pulling very softly so that I don't pull any plaques or anything with that inner. Mm-hmm. Look at that. And it just slides perfectly up to the arteriotomy. Like you, and I guess if you're doing it with X-ray, you can just envision this happening, right?
Yeah.
And now you see the SFA. Now there is a degree of angle here. You see how there's an angle? And in order to fit this snugly, I've gotten much more comfortable essentially leveraging it up. So you almost like push the system almost to 90 degrees.
Yeah, that's what device. I always take it a 90, maybe 120, so that it kind of flattens.
Yeah. But you know what's interesting is even when you hit the wall, I don't know if you do this a lot, sometimes you can push the device in. I did it there. You push back and forth almost like a piston so that it accommodates better into that segment. So look at it accommodating.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like I'm doing it a couple of times until it like perfectly aligns with the vessel wall. Ooh, so sometimes, on the first pull, it may still have a little bit at an angle, and then you kind of push the device and it's still an angle. Then what I do is I go piston in and out twice until it pulls and now it's aligned. And now I'm like, okay, perfect. Now I'm going to seal it. So then what I did there, then you twist then the other segment, right? There's a one and a two. Mm.
Yeah.
And then finally it deploys and then you just let it go. And so it's always going to have, because of the echogenic nature, it's going to look bigger, but it's a lot of artifact and reflect. But when you look at the lumen of the artery, it's pretty limited to that little nipple that you see in there.
Yeah.
And the flow, I always check that. You know, I always look at the color flow because I want to make sure that A, there's no problem with it, and B, that there's no hemodynamic problem. And I just do that with everyone. It's not a thing that I do with Kelt. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to look. Right now, I'm focusing on the top. There's nothing. There's no evidence of flow abnormalities outside of the vessel. There's no leak. And now I'm going to go ahead and make a hemodynamic assessment. And it just takes a second before my staff puts it right in the lumen. And now you can see a perfect triphasic signal. And this is distal to the placement. So the SFA looks great, essentially. So anyway, that's what I had for you today. I think it's an interesting case that people may find it interesting. The tools we use, the techniques, some of the things that we have gone to understand about these DVAs and when to open and when not, and how to do it. I try to follow up. I think we have to figure out a way to follow up these with like images, right? Like share what happened to this heel. How did they do? So maybe at some point, what we could do is a case cast summary of just results, right? Long-term results and show a little bit of how they're doing.
Yeah, actually, that's a great idea.
All right. Well, cool. I hope everybody enjoyed this and we'll meet you on the next time.
Two vascular surgeons walk into a bar and come out with a podcast. We are talking everything vascular and not. Welcome to the Life of Flow podcast.